Introduce yourself.
Naturally, I'm a warm welcome for Russell.
Hi, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group, and it's a privilege to be here. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink, nor have I had a drink, since January 25th, 1981, and I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful to be here with you guys. And I'm on one of my favorite steps, step six tonight. They call step six and seven old-timer steps. I will say that as I'm 65 years old now, yes, what is it?
Push the
wire. Push what? Do something? What? What am I supposed to do?
You're good.
What?
There you go, you got it.
Oh.
Loose wire.
Okay. By the way, it's great to see you guys. I see a lot of people I know. I saw Brad walk in. It's good to see you. I haven't seen you in a while. I drive up here, and the front here is past Carrie. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. I go to Pastor Carey's service. He has like a recovery service on Sundays at 7:30 down in Miami. I know at 5:30 down in Miami. And I drive up here. I pick up Pastor Carey at 5:30. And I think Dwayne was here and he met me there. And then and Garrett met me at my house. Garrett's here somewhere. And so we all sort of drive up here together. And then we meet Vitaly and Daniel over at Lester's and have dinner. We met James and some of the guys, and you know, we never know how many people are going to show up, and I see a whole lot of people. I'm glad Jerry picked up a chip tonight. It's great to see him. I just see a lot of people, men and women, that I've known for a long time, and I see we have standing room only here. I hate to see these young guys. Of course, you're young. You can take it standing up. You know, we have room up here in the front. You can come up here. Hello, you guys standing up. Come on up here and sit on down. You're making me nervous. Come on. I'm just going to keep on embarrassing you until you do what I want you to do, you know. You know, you're alcoholics. I know you're alcoholics and defiant, but just go ahead and take a seat, you know, and relax. Sit down. Okay. So it's good to see you guys. And I do have a couple things. I don't really plan these things, as you can probably see by now, but I do have a couple things I want to talk to you about, the sixth step. I asked my sponsor once, one of my sponsors, I've had three of them, Joe Snyder. You know, when I had 10 years, I asked him, I said, because I was still getting from time to time resentments. He didn't seem to have any resentments. And I asked him one time, I said, or if he had resentments, it didn't bother him. I said, do you still give resentments? He says, get them. I give them. So I don't know. I don't intend, if I cause you anguish or discomfort, I don't mean to do it. It's just the natural thing with me. You know what I mean? It's unintentional. It just sort of happens. But just remember, whenever you disturb, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. Or as an old preacher friend of mine once used to say, he said, when you throw a rock into a pack of dogs, the one that yells the loudest is the one that gets hit. And the reason I'm saying that is since we're on step six and seven, which has to do, you ready for this? With a separation. You know, alcoholics don't like this, six and seven. They don't like the implications of six and seven. You know, just because, you know, you're entitled to your own opinion, you're just not entitled to your own facts. And we're in a program now, a program where it has to do with truthfulness and honesty. And when you talk about stuff that's true and honest, it really doesn't matter whether you like it or not. It doesn't matter whether you like me or not. You know, I'm just going to try to share with you as honestly as possible. You know, I just pray that I not become like some sort of bleeding dickhead up here. I want to be an elder statesman. I want to be somebody that's sharing with you transparently what actually happened in my life. Now, you know, if you're an alcoholic like me, you'll figure out all sorts of ways to rationalize your way out of the truth. You know, tell yourself rational lies like this. Well, he's got his program. I got my program. You know, well, that's good for him, but that's not good for me. Well, I'm different, you know, and I can only tell you this. The longer I'm sober, you know, I've seen not only this sobriety, my sobriety's been road tested. I mean, I've had it for 33 years. I'm 65 years old, four children, six grandchildren, you know, self-supporting through my own conscience. I've gone through the whole deal, you know, the sickness, the health, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. And I've watched other people I've sponsored. I've seen them drink. I've seen them not drink. I've seen them fall by the wayside. I've seen what works, I've seen what doesn't work. And in my opinion, in my humble opinion, as far as emotional sobriety, the next frontier that Bill Wilson was talking about, not just physical, everybody in here has physical sobriety, which is a gift. It says in the big book, we have recovered from a hopeless state of mind to body. I know what a hopeless state of mind to body is because I'm a guy who was drinking against my will. I know what it's like not to be able to stop drinking. Everybody comes in here, you don't come in here to find God or get better or get laid or any of that stuff. You come in here because you can't stop. Alcoholics come to AA because they get humiliated to the point in their lives where their lives become so unmanageable because of the booze or the drugs where they look somebody in the eye or they tell themselves, I need help, I can't stop drinking. They admit they need help because they can't stop drinking. I could not stop drinking. I tried to stop drinking, I couldn't stop drinking. I'd wake up and I know what it's like to say, I'm not gonna have another drink. I'm not gonna drink today and then get drunk anyway. I know what it's like to seriously say, I'm not gonna do it and then do it anyway. Over and over and over again. I know what that feels all about. And let me tell you something, that's a hopeless state of mind and body. That's different than the shit you talk about at discussion meetings, you know what I mean? That's different between the problems and the anxiety. When you can't stop drinking, it's a real bad thing. And you know something? I was powerless over that deal. I couldn't stop drinking. We've gone over that in the first step and some of the other steps. And that's a hopeless state of mind and body. And I have recovered. I have recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. And you have recovered from that hopeless state of mind and body. That's a gift. That's a gift. You know, and you know, there's, you know, we see a lot of people. There's a lot of people here tonight. But you know, there's probably 1,000 times more people here tonight that are still out there, you know, just within this area that are drinking that'll never get it. I mean, you're like a small microcosm of alcoholics in this world, and you've recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. You know, I've been to thousands of AA meetings. I've been to thousands of AA meetings, thousands of them. Everybody's sober. Did you know that? This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me tell you the secret about Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody's drinking. This is a place where people come because they can't stop drinking, and nobody's drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. I mean, you might find a guy here, a guy there, one person here, but the truth of the matter is in Alcoholics Anonymous, people don't drink. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't even help with the drinking thing. The drinking thing happens almost before you get here, somewhere around the first step, maybe the first few weeks. After that, it's all about alcoholism. It's all about finding a new freedom and a new happiness. It's all about, as they say in the big book, losing fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter, being reborn. It's all about being rocketed in the fourth dimension of existence, experience much of heaven. It's all about, as Bill Wilson said, the next frontier, emotional sobriety. That the real problem of alcoholics is unhealthy dependencies. Or one of the ways it's said in the big book, our real problem has to do with what centers in our mind, not our body. The drinking is a symptom of the disease. We drink because we're restless, irritable, and discontented. We're in a state of dis-ease, sober. Unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. That's how fast it works. For me, as I was pulling up to the bar, I started feeling better. As I'm parking, I start feeling better. As I'm thinking about the booze, I'm feeling better. Because I feel so shitty, so crappy about myself and other people sober. Somehow, some way, no matter what I tell myself, it's never good enough. There's something missing, and alcohol made it better. Made it better than any woman, than any car, than any job, than any amount of money, than anything. So I stopped drinking. Now all of a sudden I'm back to the same problem I had in the first place. What am I gonna do now? You know what I'm gonna do now? I'm gonna use all that other shit that didn't work as well as alcohol, but it still worked. I'm gonna use the women. I'm gonna use the sex. I'm gonna use the job. I'm gonna use the car. I'm gonna use everything else around me that I can grab. I'm gonna use the weight, the vanity stuff. I'm gonna use the relationships. I'm gonna use everything else I can shove in that hole to fix me, except alcohol, and find out the terrible truth that I'm as addicted to that shit as I was to the alcohol, and it doesn't work either. So I'll just take it to an A meeting and discuss it. And I'll just discuss all that shit and think that I'm getting better because I feel a little bit better, I get a little relief, and I don't drink after the meeting. Then I'll go out in my car and I'll drive home with the same old bullshit. The same old worry about him, about her, about the car, about the job, the same old crap. And get physically sober, which is something, I'm not putting down being physically sober, but never getting what they got in the big book, never getting that rocket ship ride into the fourth dimension of existence. never experiencing what they said in the big book, see that with that relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass. When you're not never experiencing the great events, never experiencing that remarkable thing that happens when you turn your will and your life over to him. When it says, when we sincerely make such a decision of turning your life over to God, all sorts of remarkable things happen. Being all-powerful, he gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. You know, we start losing concerns for our little plans and designs. Losing concerns for our little plans and designs. I start drinking, all I do is think about myself. All I want to do is talk about myself. I want to go to meetings and tell you what my problem is. I want, after the meeting, I want to continue to tell you what my problem is. I want to be my sponsor and talk about my problems. All I want to do is think about my problems. The more I talk about my shit, the worse I feel. It doesn't go away. It magnifies it. You know what it says? It says if we turn our lives over to him, he says we lose concern over our little plans of design. We start thinking about how we can help others. It says we know a new freedom. We know a new happiness. How do you get that stuff? How do you get the Al Kennedy stuff? When I went to the meeting and I was 3 months sober, and I see some guy talking about 30, 35 years. And after the meeting, he was just incredible. And after the meeting, he leaves the meeting, and my sponsor tells me, you know, he's dying of cancer. And I said, no, what do you mean? He says, the guy who spoke, he's dying of cancer. I said, no, that guy Al Kennedy. He says, yeah, he's dying, because he didn't even mention it. He says, he's dying of cancer. And 3 months later, he was dead. How do you get that deal? I mean, I was there. I saw it. I saw a guy who was dying of cancer, had 3 months to live, and he did a meeting just like I'm doing a meeting now. And you would have thought that he was on his way to get a pizza. You know, I mean, how do you get that? I'm sitting there. I'm a thumb-sucking crybaby. I got 3 months, and all I'm doing is talking about how I need a new brake job or something. You know what I mean? This guy's got, he's got 3 months to live. It's like he's the happiest guy in the entire room. You know, you can stop drinking. How do you stop the thinking? How do you stop the self-pity? How do you stop the thousand forms of fear, self-delusion, and selfishness? You know, selfishness, self-centeredness, that's the nature of our problem. That's the problem. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, we step on toes of others, they retaliate. We're self-aware and right, though we usually don't think so. All we do is think about ourselves. We must get rid of the selfishness, or it kills us. Then it says, God makes that possible. How does God make that possible? Who is God? How do I do that God? That's great, that God thing. How do you do that God thing? How do you do that God thing? Especially when you hate that God thing. When you want to be God, and you want to be in control, and you've never done the God thing before. All you've done is the Colt 45 thing, you've done the Scotch thing, you've done the sex thing, you've done every other thing on the planet. You've never done the God thing. As a matter of fact, if you were in the bars and you said anything about the God thing, they'd laugh at you, and you're an alcoholic. The last thing you want is anybody laughing at you, because you want them to think you're cool. And God is not cool. I'm sorry, Jesus isn't cool. Church isn't cool. That stuff isn't cool. You know, as a matter of fact, when you start talking about it, I get pissed off. That's why they wrote Chapter of the Agnostic. Because the only thing that was going to heal you, seriously, is going to be that deal. And that's what the book is all about. And we're filled with thousands and thousands of people that don't want to hear that shit. What do you do when the only thing that will propel you past the gravitational pull of this disease is the God thing? And the nature of the alcoholic is to be defiantly against the God thing. Even to the point that even as I'm talking about it in meetings, even though it talks about it in the book, people in the back saying, I don't want to hear this shit. They're dying out there. They're going to die out there. They're going to drink again. They're unhappy. And I'm explaining to you what's happened in my life and what's going on in the big book, and they don't want to hear it. How does that deal work? You know what I mean? So all I can do really is sort of try to share a few things with you. And, you know, I mean, how do you, one of the major things about speaking is, I try not to think too much about it because it's a daunting thing. You know, you think about, how do you wrap up? I was sober 31 years before I came to AA. I've been sober 33 years now. We're talking about like 65 years or something like that, with all sorts of experiences. So all I got to do is sort of wrap that up in like 35, 40 minutes in such a way so that you sort of understand what I'm talking about. And I have no idea how to do that. So all I can do is share a couple of experiences and things and hope what I think happens at every AA meeting happens. And that is, if the pupil is ready and if you're ready to hear something, you'll hear it, even if I don't even say it. Because I know that's true. That's that old chicken on the roof story. I'll just say something, and you'll hear shit I don't even mean. Because you're ready to hear it. Because you're open. And if you're not open to hear it, it doesn't matter what I say, because you're not going to get it. Because you're not interested in it. And it works like that. So that's the way the deal is, okay? I want to read you a couple of things and talk about something. I'm going to read you this little deal right here first. This little poem I like to read. You know, first of all, you got to decide. It may take time to decide whether you want what we have. You know, it does say in the book, we read it all the time, it says, if you want what we have, Doesn't it say if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps? Doesn't it say you're ready when you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it? Does it say that? It doesn't say take the steps. It says if you want what we have, whatever the hell that is. Whoever your we is, do you even have a we? Do you have people you look up to or people you don't put people on pedestals, but in a sense we do. We have leaders. No, we don't have leaders in AA. Of course we have leaders. They're trusted servants. They're servants. You can always tell the leaders, they're the ones that are serving. The other ones are taking. The leaders are serving. That's why they say it. Our trusted leaders, they're servants. You look at the people that are serving and trying to help other people and are interested in other people, those are the leaders. The other people are trying to get. They're trying to get. There's nothing wrong with trying to get, because those people trying to get will eventually, if they're separated from the men from the boys, they will be the people that are giving, that are more interested in giving. And they'll get to that place, that rocket ship ride into the fourth dimension. It's just the nature of the deal. I'm not asking you to like that. You don't have to like the truth. You can say the truth is bullshit. Doesn't matter. That means your deal. I'm just telling you the way it works. It's pretty clear. You'd have to be willfully blind not to understand that's the way it works in here. That there's sobriety and there's sobriety. And let me tell you something. There's a lot of people that play golf. There's only a few Tiger Woods. You know, I mean, golf is golf and golf, but there's only a few Tiger Woods. There's not a lot of people that like Al Kennedys. There's not a lot of Al Kennedys around or Joe Snyder's around. Or Bill, or you know, Bill Wilson's around. Or Dr. Bob Smith's around. You know, if you want what they have, what do you want? Do you want what they have? Or do you want it? Or do you want what the guy sitting next to you with three more months than you has that's talking about getting laid next Saturday? Which one do you want? Do you want what you have, what we have, or do you want what you used to have? Do you want back your old life? You just want to go back to your old life, your own deal, but you just want to figure out how to do it so you don't drink and get into trouble. What do you want? You want to figure out what you want. If you want what we have and you're willing to go to England, you know, the person you'll be in the next 5 years will depend on the people you hang out with and the books you read. And the books you read will depend upon the people you hang out with. I can tell you all about you and what's going to happen to you. All I have to hear is who you're hanging out with. You know who makes the decision as to who you're hanging out with? You. You know who picks the sponsor you pick? You. You know, if your sponsor ain't telling you to do anything and you ain't getting together with your sponsor and he's not interested, you know what I mean? You're the one who picked him. You know what I mean? Or maybe you're not calling them. You're the one who decides what you want, who you want, and you're the one who decides whether you're willing to go to any length to get it. I told a little story here last week. Maybe some of you didn't get what I was telling them about the Leo story, about the kid who wasn't even in AA. And I told him about some sort of Bible study at 3:30 in the morning. He woke up and he walked 7 miles to my house. A lot of you guys were there. Because more than anything else, he wanted that deal. He was willing to take any length to get what he had to get. And for some people, they don't want this thing. You know, this is just, you know what this is? This is, for some people, this is just another bar where they drink coffee. You know, I used to go to bars all the time at 4 o'clock, 4:30, 5:30 in the afternoon. I drink beer. For some people, this is just another group they can hang out with, feel less lonely, and drink coffee. They ain't interested in anything else other than that. And they'll get what they'll get. You know, they found a long time ago in the 1950s that even though we say half measures availed us nothing, that's not necessarily true. Half measures can keep you sober for 10, 15 years. I've seen it happen. I've seen people commit or not commit and just sort of not drink and go to meetings and rely on the fellowship and stay sober for 10 or 15 years and then commit suicide or drink. I've seen people at 18 years drink all the time. I've seen people at 3 years drink all the time. I've seen life take people out of here all the time. Life is a humbling experience. You know, I know all this stuff isn't happy deal stuff. Doesn't necessarily make you feel good. You know what I mean? And you can resent it and maybe it'll go away, but the bottom line is it has something to do with what's really going on in life. Because now we're on the sixth step, now we're getting serious, because it says in the 12 and 12, this is what it says about the sixth step. It says in step six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. You know, I love the words they use. Now, of course, we're alcoholics, you know, so we sort of change the words in our mind. We're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Just do the best you can. You know, don't get too crazy about this stuff. You know what I mean? I got to have balance in my life, you know? Balance. I don't want to get too crazy about AA. You know, I got other things to do. That's sort of like when they say it at the beginning of every meeting. You know, what does it say? We haven't seen anybody. What is the line? Now I'm forgetting it. Thoroughly? What does it say? Rarely have we seen a person. In 1939, there was a little over 100 people that were sober. They described sobriety as being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, of which we had not even dreamed. There was no big book. They were avidly reading. The guys from the meetings were avidly reading. As a matter of fact, the old-timers said the books that they were absolutely essential was 1 Corinthians 13, Sermon on the Mount, and the Book of James. We almost call this the James Club. I mean, that's just the facts. That's what they're doing. You don't have to be Jewish, Christian, Muslim. I don't care. That's just what they were doing. And they were having prayer meetings. And you couldn't go to a meeting unless you got down on your knees and you gave your life to God. Period. That was the deal. And then they wrote a book. He said, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly, thoroughly followed our path. That's the word. Entirely, thoroughly, painstaking. Painstaking, thoroughly, entirely becomes, well, you got your program, I got my program. Take what you like and leave the rest. You know what I mean? You don't like that stuff, fuck it. You know what I mean? And people walk around like thumb-sucking crybabies with 5 years, you know, worrying about their sex life and worry about everything that has, other than the stuff we worry about here, and they wonder about why AA is not working for them because they haven't been doing it. As a matter of fact, we haven't been doing an AA for about 50 years now. Because when they started discovering that you could stay sober and not get arrested and actually hold down a job and maybe get laid once in a while and not drink and you didn't have to worry about the God stiff and everything like that, when you're dealing with a bunch of self-centered, selfish, defiant, egotistical alcoholics, 80% of them said, fuck it, I ain't going to do it. That's what they said. You ever try to convince an alcoholic to do something when they're not in jail and they're not facing deportation and they've been sober 5 years? They say, get off my ass. I'm not drinking. I don't even feel like drinking. I just picked up a purple chip, whatever, you know? Forget it. You know, that's the deal. And so that's what happens. So at the end of your deal, whether you've got 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, whatever it is, If you ain't getting out of this what you want to get out of it because you get what you put into it, this is a program of faith, you want to ask yourself where you want to be. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. This is what it says. It says, this is the step that separates the men from the boys. I ain't making this shit up. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. You know, now you may say, this is what alcoholics like to say. Alcoholics like to say, that's bullshit. We're all the same. You're not any better than me. Well, that's not true. That's not true. It's not true. You can live in truth or you can live in fiction. We're all the same. We all have the same opportunity. But as far as this program is concerned, we're not all the same. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. That's why people pick sponsors. They pick sponsors because the person has what they want. They don't have it yet. If everybody had what everybody wanted, we wouldn't even be talking to sponsors. There are some people that have shit that other people never get out of this deal. And they don't even know how to get it. This is the step that separates the men from the boys, which means there must be some men here and there must be some boys, which means that some people aren't separated out. Some people don't get separated out. You just have to decide whether you're going to be a man or you're going to be a boy. Believe me, I sponsor them. I sponsor 65-year-old two-year-olds. Trust me, they're out there. Guys that are 50 years old and on their third marriage and hunting for something, and they don't know what they're hunting for, and it has nothing to do with what's in the big book. But they haven't had a drink in 20 years. So declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. Now, isn't that a clergyman? I know you hear in all the meetings, based upon the wisdom of the room, that, you know, religion bad. Isn't that what you hear? Religion bad. Hey, I'm spiritual, not religious. Isn't that the AA? No. Here's the way it works. The thing was started and helped by clergymen. Bill Wilson essentially was sponsored by clergymen. Okay? And the steps were developed by clergymen with Bill Wilson, Sam Shoemaker, and Ed Dowling. And right in the middle of the big book, it says, we lose prejudice even against organized religion. We begin to see where religious people are right. So you see, sober people have no problem understanding this. The men have no problem understanding this. They don't have a beef against organized religion. You know what I mean? The people you in the rooms that are putting down organized religion, They're not sober. They have a resentment. The resentment is against organized religion. I know what a resentment looks like. I know what a resentment sounds like. And I know what the big book says about that. Now, that doesn't mean anybody of you have to join up or do anything like that. But the problem is, some of you ought to read the big book. See what this is all about. I can't afford to have resentments against anybody. You know, I got to work on this program. So I'm just going to tell you how it works for me and what happened to me. So it says, so the glitter well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of AA's greatest friends. He goes on to explain that any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step six on all is false without any reservations has indeed come a long way spiritually. A long way spiritually. I'm spiritual, not religious. Nothing wrong with being spiritual. You know how they define spirituality here? This is how they define it. They're a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to call a man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own creator. Can't get away from that God thing, can't you? You can't do that. Because it's all throughout the book. It's infused throughout the book. So you can do this any way you want. So let me read you a couple of things. Because what does the sixth step have to do with, in my mind, based upon my experience? What it really has to do with is something called surrender. Surrender. The surrender. Have you surrendered? I mean, that's the question you got. Have you surrendered? Have you surrendered? When you get what you want in your struggle for pelf, pelf is shit, you know, money, property, sex, people, you know, pelf is an old English word for stuff. When you get what you want in your struggle for pelf and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say. For it isn't your father or mother or wife whose judgment upon you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back in the glass. He's the fellow to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end, and you've passed your most dangerous, difficult test if the guy in the glass is your friend. You may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. Why do these actors, why do these people that you read in Entertainment Tonight and everything like that, we know who they all are, guys that have millions of dollars, guys that are famous, guys that are looked up to, guys that win awards, why do they end up killing themselves? Yeah. Why can't they stop drinking? Why are they unhappy? They got all the girls, the boys, the sex, anything they want. Why are they so lonely? You may be like, you know, the stuff ain't gonna do it. You can look, just like it says, you may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum. You could win an Oscar and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. You can fool the whole world down the pathway of years and get pats on the backs as you pass, but your final reward will be heartache and tears if you've cheated the guy in the glass. You don't want to cheat that guy. You don't want to do the water. You don't want to do the, listen, I'm going to suggest you don't, if you want the good results, you don't want to do the watered down stuff. You know, you don't want to, because half measures, you know, probably will avail you nothing when it comes to the spiritual stuff. In 1937, I'm going to read this from Dr. Bob in the Good Old Times if you really want to know what thoroughly meant. When they say anybody who does this thoroughly, I'm going to read to you what they were doing. You know, you think because you're an AA now and listening to the wisdom of the rooms and all these guys that are telling you what they think, you think you're doing what they were doing in 1937 when they say, rarely have I seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Thoroughly followed our path. Utterly given their life over to God. Was their attitude about God and about the Creator and about surrender the same as the attitude we have in Alcoholics Anonymous today or even tonight in this room? So here's from 101. I'm not making this stuff up. Here's the deal. On the other hand, we were taking them upstairs and getting them on their knees to surrender, which I felt was a very important part. Getting them on their knees to surrender. The surrender was more than important. It was a must. It was a must. Bob E., who came into AA in February 1937, recalled that after 5 or 6 days in the hospital, when you had indicated that you were serious, they told you to get down on your knees by the hospital bed and say a prayer to God, admitting you were powerless over alcohol and your life was unmanageable. Furthermore, you had to state that you believed in a higher power who would return you to sanity. There you can see the beginning of the 12 steps. He said, we call that the surrender. The surrender. When was the last time you heard that as a topic in an AA room? Like never? They demanded it. You couldn't go to a meeting until you did it. If by accident you didn't make it in the hospital, you had to make it in the upstairs bedroom over the Williamson's house. Dorothy S.M. recalled the 1937 meetings when the men would all disappear upstairs and all us women would be nervous and worried about what was going on. After about a half an hour or so, down would come the new man, shaking, white, serious, and grim. And all the people who were already in AA would come trooping down after him. They were pretty reluctant to talk about what had happened, but after a while they would tell us they had a real surrender. I often wonder how many people that come in now would survive that experience. A regular old-fashioned prayer meeting, said Dorothy, who was then married to AA member Clarence S. Anybody tell you how to get down on your knees and give your life to God and ask Him to relieve you of this alcoholism before you came here tonight? Well, I'll tell you what. If I was to say, if you wanted to come in here, I was going to say that's what you had to do in front of a bunch of people, we'd have one-tenth the people in here than we have here tonight. Maybe. That's probably true. One-tenth. Wouldn't have as many people. Now, I'm not saying we should do that. We probably have one-tenth the number of people. But I'll tell you one thing. Those people would be flipping serious. There wouldn't be any problems with the third step, because they were doing the third step before they got to their first meeting. There wouldn't be any bullshit or argument. There wouldn't be any defiance about the God thing. There wouldn't be any, I don't think that, or this is a bunch of bullshit. And the other guys would go out until they copped a new attitude and wanted to come in here so much that they would be willing to get down on their knees. But of course, we're nicer now. We don't have the surrender. The closest thing we have to the surrender is this sort of thing. It's called the white chin. It's sort of like the surrender because humiliation is part of this deal. You may not like that, but the seventh step, which we're going to get to next week, says the way we get a new perspective is by 1,000 forms of humiliation and the final crushing of our self-sufficiency. There's something about this disease that is so powerful and so compels us to do the wrong thing, thinking it's the right thing, that until we get crushed, we don't say, gee, I think maybe I was wrong and I should rethink this thing. I mean, the truth of the matter is, most of us were told by people way before we got here that we have a drinking problem, we have a drug problem, and we told them to go screw themselves. And it was only after we were arrested for the 17th time or something terrible happened that we considered, maybe I do have a problem. So somehow, some way, being crushed and humiliated, getting down on your knees has something to do with a change of mind and a change of attitude and allowing some sort of change, some sort of psychic change. In the big book, they say when Roland Hazard was talking to Carl Jung about it, he says ideas, emotions, and the attitudes of most of these men are certainly kicked over to the side, and they become dominated by a whole new set of emotions and attitudes. And let me tell you something. Alcoholism, the thing that you got right now after the drinking, dominates you. It's the thing that tells you got to have a new car, you got to have a new blouse, you got to have bigger breasts, you know, you got to do this, you got to have a relationship, you got to have a man, you got to have a woman. It's the thing that you focus on your entire life and you measure yourself by why you're a piece of crap, why you're okay. You know, this is why you can't even get out of it, because it's just the way I think. It compels you, it dominates you, and you don't even know, because that's just the way you are, it's the way you've been all your life. And that's why you'll never find any type of happiness, because you measure yourself and everything about you and who you are. You know, Carl Menninger wrote a book, Man Against Himself. In that book in 1930s, he said, alcoholics are men and women who have to destroy themselves. They hate themselves because all they do is measure themselves against how they feel inside, and how they feel inside has to do with what they think about themselves. And I know what we think about ourselves. We're lathering up in the shower, and all of a sudden a voice comes through and says, you're an asshole. You're a piece of crap. You don't deserve to live. Thinking bad shit about ourselves and other people all the time, we turn around and say, see who's saying that, and we're the only ones in the shower. We're the only ones in the car. And that's your reputation about you with you. And it compels you throughout your life to win, to get ahead, to brag, to seek attention, to make more money, to lie about what you make, to lie about yourself. It compels you into all sorts of things, to do such of things that you think are right for you that somehow end up exploding and screwing up your life. And you don't even know why you do it, because you just do it automatically. You think it's your free will. Free will, bullshit. You're programmed for failure. And you don't even know, because you think that's just the way I am. And the only way, I'd say to my sponsor, that's my personality. He says, it's your personality that's killing you. How do you change your personality when you're somehow in love with it? And you think it's great. And if I change my personality, everything about me, what will I be? I'll be like a nothing. No, you won't be a nothing. You'll be one of the men. You'll be one of the women. You'll be what you look like, what you personally look like when you have taken these steps seriously and you've gone seriously and your whole life is focused upon God and being of maximum service to Him and other people, which is what this book wants you to be. You'll be that. And that'll look like an AA leader. That'll be attractive to people. It won't be selfish, it won't be self-centered. So all we have, the closest thing we have to getting down on your knees is saying, anybody want to pick up a white chip? It's a little humiliating. But you know, it's still a sort of like a good thing. We keep it a little bit, and the people are forced to come up here. Of course, every once in a while we don't even want to do that. We'll say, well, if you're embarrassed or you're shy, I'll just put it over there and you can pick it up under the cover of darkness after we all leave. We don't want anybody to suffer or be humiliated or anything because they might leave and say to somebody, you know, that guy Russell Guy's an asshole and we can't stand anybody talking bad about us behind our back because our ego is so small that we can't take any criticism whatsoever. So we'd rather see people die as long as they like us than in any way hurt their feelings. And that just has to do with being codependent, which most alcoholics are anyway. So here I come into Alcoholics Anonymous. Now I got that, and you know, I was fortunate. Thank you. I was fortunate. 3 o'clock in the morning, December 25th, 1980. December 25th, Christmas Day. 3 o'clock in the morning, I got down on my knees. Hey, I gave my life to Jesus. I was a guy on TV, you know, I couldn't stop drinking. He said, you know, he said you could change your life. And I got down on my knees and gave my life to Jesus because he gave me the sinner's prayer. And I'm not trying to convert you. I'm just telling you what happened to me. And not a big deal for most of you guys who were raised in that kind of home. But, you know, when you're a Jewish kid from New York, well, you got to be desperate. But when you're desperate and you want to stop drinking, you'd be surprised what you could do. So I did that deal before I went to my first AA meeting. I didn't know I was doing what they were doing before I went to my AA first day, but that's what I was. You know, somebody came up to me. And I won't, it's not important, but it's an interesting deal. Somebody came up to me and after the meeting last time when I talked about this. And you don't know if you know this in the big book, it suggests that you do it on your knees. It suggests that you do it on your knees with your sponsor. And somebody came up to me after the meeting who I respect, who's good AA, you know, and he says, well, you don't really think you have to do it on, you don't have to do it on your knees. And I said, yeah, listen, I'm not God, you know. I'm not the arbiter of all of AA. I'm not going to say you have to do it on your knees, but I'll tell you this. That's how they did it. That's how they did it. And I think they did it that way for a reason. And I think the reason they did it that way, because it was difficult, impossible for an alcoholic to do that action. It was like evidence of how willing they were to do that action. Somehow, by getting on your knees and humbling yourself, I think something spiritually changes in an alcoholic. I said, so I'm not going to tell you that's what you have to do, but I'm going to tell you that's what they did according to the book. And I'm going to ask you this question. I'm going to suggest this to you. Maybe you're asking me that question because you would prefer to believe that you don't have to do it on your knees. And maybe I'll just suggest this. The thing inside of you that's telling you that this is bullshit and you would prefer not to do it that way has less to do with what's right and more to do with your alcoholism and your defiance. So maybe you might want to ask yourself why you're unwilling to surrender. So I'm going to ask you again, have you surrendered? Have you surrendered? Now, one of the things I want to tell you is what I've noticed about my life is, and here's the good news. I think it's good news. I hope it's good news, but I'm just going to tell you, this is the way it is. My life at 65 years of age, 33 years sober, is different than it was at 3 months sober. It's different than the amount of time I spend in worship, in Bible study, whatever. It's different. So a lot of the surrenders, I mean, I threw in the towel. I got on my knees, I threw in the towel, and as I've heard it said, I got off, you know, we come in here unemployable. 3 months later, we're underpaid, you know? And I, listen, 3 months later, it's get off my ass, you know? I know what I'm doing. What happens is I threw in the towel and then I snatched the son of a bitch back and I spent the next 10 years throwing in strips to see what that would satisfy him. And I can see different parts of my life where I was forced to go to different levels. And you know how we're forced to go to different levels here? Well, to a certain extent, it is because we see people that we want what they have. But to another extent, it's also combined with what got us in here in the first place, pain. You have enough pain, and you're unhappy enough, and you see people that aren't in that pain, you know what I mean? And you hang around with them, you get to different levels. And I remember like it was yesterday, I was going to meetings, I was doing what you guys are doing. I was doing what we do. I was making coffee for the group. I was doing everything. Everything. I was doing the steps and everything. You know, I was going to meetings. I liked AA. And every week or so, I'd sit down with my sponsor and tell him how screwed up my life was. And every week, he would say the same thing to me because he was stupid. He didn't understand, you know, my complexity. You know what I mean? And every week he'd say the same thing. He'd ask me this question. He'd say, I'd sit down and I'd talk to him how there were crummy things happening in my life and I didn't feel good. And he'd say, well, let me ask some. When was the last meeting you went to? And I said, you don't understand, this has nothing to do with that. It has to do with my feelings and my emotion and money and my wife and my boss and everything like that. He says, yeah, but what was the last meeting? I'd say, well, I went to one 2 days ago. And he'd say this. He'd say, you know, Russ, when you go to meetings, you feel good. When you don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. And I'd say, well, but what am I going to do about my boss? What am I going to do about this problem? What am I going to do about this? And that lasted for 5 flipping years. I was a division chief in the state's attorney's office. I was a lawyer doing major trials. I was not stupid. I was sober. I was sponsoring people. 5 flipping years. One day, I was sitting in JJ's American Diner complaining about some other problem that I had. Usually it's the same problem over and over again with different actors and stuff like that. And he looked at me and I gave him my complaint again. And I said to him, and I put it down, and this is what he said to me. Well, when was the last meeting you went? Because I was going to meetings and I was thinking, you know, look, I have a lot, you know, AA is great, I love AA, but I got a freaking life. I got a life, you know what I mean? And he said to me again, when was the last meeting you went to? And I said, well, I went to one yesterday morning. And he said, and this was 5 o'clock in the afternoon today, he says, well, you know, Russ, when you go to meetings, you feel good. When you don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. And I said, I'm shaking my head. I said, yeah, but what am I going to do with my boss, my wife, and everything like that? I'm going to meetings. I'm going to 4 or 5 meetings a week. I'm going to 4 or 5 meetings a week, man. 4 or 5 meetings a week. I'm like a fanatic. And so I drove off in my car, and I started thinking about what he said, because it takes 5 years to sort of register with an alcoholic. You go to meetings, you feel good. You don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. You go to meetings, you feel good. You don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. I said, wait a second, let me say. You go to meetings, you feel good. You don't go to meetings, you don't feel so good. And I said, and I don't know what happened, something clicked. It's like a miracle. And I took the limit off. And I started to go to meetings every single morning. And for lunchtime, I would go to a meeting. And sometimes at night, I'd go to meetings 3 times. I'd go to meetings 4 times. It wouldn't matter. I didn't put a limit on anything. I didn't put a limit on how many people I sponsored. I just took the limits off of the deal. I stopped worrying about the car, the wife, the this, the that. They were all there. They were all there waiting for me. And all I was doing is going to meetings, you know? And all of a sudden, I went to a different level. I'm telling you, things changed quickly. A different level with the fellowship, a different level with the intensity. 15 years sober. 15 years sober. No, maybe it was around 12 years sober. I'm not sure. Around that time, some guy taps me on the shoulder. Wasn't even an AA guy. And he says, he was listening to how I talk and everything. He says, Russ, you've ever been to a Bible study? I said, no, I'm Jewish kid from New York. You know, I mean, I had been reading the Bible. I'd been reading the Bible in AA. I'd been reading AA. I'd reading AA literature. Some of the, you know, I'd reading the 24-hour books every day and asking God's help to stay sober. 24-hour books is a combination of the big book and the Bible, you know. And I said, no, I don't think. He says, you really like going to Bible. I said, no. He says, I started thinking about my Aunt Joan and what she would think up in New York. She'd been dead for 10 years, but she wouldn't like that. And here's what happened. And I was all ready to say no, and what happened was I somehow, and I don't know where this came from, at 15 years, I started realizing that when you say no because you're afraid, see, this is how alcoholics think. You see, at 15 years, I had apparently graduated. What alcoholics think is they worry a lot. I know we say we don't worry about what other people think about us. I know we're going to go a little bit over. Don't worry about it. You'll be okay. But the bottom line is, but the truth is, if you're an alcoholic, you know all you do is worry about what other people think about you. I mean, that's all you do is, you know, it's like, you know, enough about me, you know, what about you, what do you think about me? You know, it's all about me, what did I sound like, what did I say, what do they think about me? And so what happens is, the way an alcoholic makes a decision is this going to be good for me? Is this a good thing to do? Will this possibly help me? And then the fourth thing you think about, and then it crosses your mind, what will other people think about me? And if you worry about it, if you think they're going to think you're uncool, it wipes out the rest. It trumps everything else. And I knew that Bible study was uncool, and I knew people didn't in AA didn't like that, so I was all ready to say no. But somehow I had graduated to the point where I realized that a decision made upon that kind of deal was not a good, and I had read the book, the material, I knew they did it. I knew they did it between 1935 and 1939, so I started going to this Bible. I showed up at this Bible study Thursday morning at 7:30. And the guy who invited me there was there. I went to this Bible study at this church. And the next Thursday, I showed up again. And they were talking about the same stuff we talk about in here, but they were reading the Bible. And the next Thursday, that guy never showed up again. And I stayed there for the next 15 years. And now, every Thursday morning at 7:30, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I get up and I leave and I buy the bagels for that church and that Bible study. And I became a deacon in that church. And you don't have to have a medallion in your pocket to be my friend. I have a lot of friends that are working a spiritual journey. It just opened up a whole new avenue to me that are not necessarily alcoholics, but they suffer from the same stuff we suffer from. They just don't drink. They suffer from the same deal, but they just don't drink. And a whole new avenue and a whole new ministry and a whole new thing. And you know something? I started going to those meetings and the AA meetings because nobody told me I can't do that. You know what I mean? Because I can do whatever I want to do because I'm free. And you know what happened? What happened is, you know what happened to me between when I started going to meeting every day? And my sobriety went from here to there. What happened when I started doing that stuff? And AA, it went from here to there. It got propelled. You know, I started thinking outside. It went to a different level. Because I was doing what they were doing between 35 and 37. What Bill Wilson was doing. What Dr. Bob was doing. What they were doing. Now, the truth of the matter is, it took me 15 years to do it. And I'm still doing it. I'm still doing that deal. And some of you are going to be doing that deal. Some of you along the way that are saying to yourselves right now, I'll never do that deal. You can't even see going to more than 3 meetings a week. Some of you are going to start going to 5 meetings a week. Some of you are going to start going to 10. Let me tell you something. You can't stay sober to good intent. You can't stay sober, happy, joyous, and free at 15 years sobriety based upon the stuff you're doing at 5 years. You got to grow. You got to change. You got to become entirely ready to do things. You got to have more. It's more surrender. It's great. It's more surrender. You had to surrender in order to get here. You've seen people who are not willing to surrender this program. You see what happens to them. You got to surrender once you get here even more. Now, it may not be the first day. It may not be the first month. It may not be the first year. And we're all looking for the magic pill. I get you. You're 5 years sober. You're having problems. You think you're doing everything. And you want someone to tell you, take this pill. You know, do this, do that, move to Nebraska, get another job. You want to hope that that stuff will work. That stuff ain't going to work. The boy isn't going to help you. The girl isn't going to help you. The car isn't going to help you. The only thing that's going to work is another surrender. I know you're thinking, listen, I didn't come here for extra credit. Nah, right? Take what you like and leave the rest. Russ, I appreciate what you're saying. Thanks. I know that works for you, but you don't understand me. I'm a mover, a shaker. I'm a type A personality. I make $150,000 a year, $200,000 a year. I got a Lamborghini outside. You don't understand what's going on. Listen, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. I've got the guys who drive the Maseratis and have the trophy wives. I get them after the divorce when they lost the Maserati and they're going to jail for failure to pay child support too. I get all that shit. I have them all there. I get it. Believe me. I understand the deal, okay? I understand. Nobody's more egocentric and grandiose than I am. I've been there, done that. I own that territory. I've rented it from time to time, okay? You don't understand. This is about further and further surrender. Now, I get you that you're all alcoholics. You're not going to walk out of here and all of a sudden do the shit I'm doing at 33 years just because I told you. But don't be surprised if somewhere down the road you find yourself not going to 5 meetings a week but going to 8 meetings a week or going to 10 meetings a week. Or reading all sorts of stuff, even the Bible, or even go to Bible. Don't let anybody tell you that all that is bullshit. All that counts. It all counts. It's what separates. It has to do with becoming entirely ready to have God remove all these defects. It has to do with that thing that they wouldn't let. You know when they wouldn't let him in the meetings? They said you had to get down on your knees to do it. It has to do with that shit. It has to do with surrender. Let me tell you something. Don't tell me you've surrendered when there's no evidence in your life that you have. Don't play make-believe or phony up with this thing and telling yourself you really surrendered when you're really holding back. When you've surrendered like a third of your life to this AA and the rest of it is going to let's make money, you know, let's focus on the relationship type of thing. You know, it will have its effect down the road. So God bless you. Thank you very much.